evening and welcome to The Librarian. I am the librarian host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyrighted trade and trademark podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network on the web at authorsontheair.com. Oh, so this is kind of how it's going to be tonight. I'm tripping over my words already. Awesome. Okay. Should have had more wine. So welcome to the show tonight. We have Tana Finsky, who is writing under Montlake and Entangled's new Left Swept line. And tonight, let me tell you a little bit about Tana first. Tana Finsky is a USA Today bestselling romantic comedy author who writes humorous fiction, risque romance, and heartwarming love stories with a quirky twist. Her offbeat brand of romance has been praised by booklist as a tame Carl Hyacin on Cupid juice. And RT Book Reviews nominated her debut novel for Contemporary Romance of the Year. Tana is a fourth generation Oregonian, I hope I said that correctly, who can peel a banana with her toes and who loses an average of 20 pairs of eyeglasses every year. She lives in Bend, Oregon with her husband, stepkids, and a menagerie of ill-behaved pets. And you can learn more about Tana as you visit her website. And we'll talk more about where we can find her. All the links are here for her social media and website here as well. And welcome to the show, Tana.
Thank you so much for having me. That was a mouthful, that bio there.
When I start out, even before that, with the part that I could say in my sleep, tripping over my words, you know it's going to be one of those times. So that's okay. Like I said, should have had more wine.
Where is the wine? You didn't mention that.
All right. Yeah, would you like some? Yeah, I'll send it from Texas. Okay. So welcome from the West Coast.
Thank you.
And did I say Oregonian correctly? I don't even know if that's correct.
You did indeed. Yes, asked. Most people like to try to say Oregonian or something like that. Yeah. Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay, good. Good, I got something right tonight. Yay, me. Okay, I can drink some more drinks more after this. So I love what Booklist said about your romance, and I think that's just it's awesome.
Thank you.
You really can't beat that, because that just you know it's gonna be light and funny and super love, it's just perfect. So I mean, what was your reaction when you got that little blurb?
That's one of my favorites. That was actually, I think that one came out a couple of years ago, and I don't even remember which of my books they were talking about. I've got, I think, 13, 14 out now.
Right.
And, you know, when I first started out, even years ago, pitching romantic comedy, I think people were a little bit mystified by the idea. Like, what, so you write movies, you mean? Like, no, you know how there are romantic comedies that are movies. They also have them in book form, and that's what I write. But it seemed like I kind of started in before it was really on an upswing, and right now I'm lucky enough that it seems like everybody knows what romantic comedy novels are, and we're having kind of a heyday with it.
Well, yeah, it's the best form of escape there is. I mean, you know, you want to get away from everything, and, you know, you're watching the news, and you see, I see this probably every week, too. It's just everything's so negative. It's so negative, you know, between the presidential election, the terroristic attacks and everything else. And you want to get away from that and shut the door and read a book that makes you laugh, makes you cry, makes you happy, you know, makes you whatever.
Makes you tingly in the food area.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, I mean, those are like, absolutely. I mean, one of my favorite movie is a romantic comedy, and I therefore can totally buy into that. And, you know, I mean, there's a time for a serious book, but I would say escape-wise, you want a lighthearted romance with a lot of good...
That's what I'm aiming for. Yeah. And,
dialogue, yeah.
My favorite reader emails to get are the ones that are like, you know, I was having a really crappy time, my mother-in-law was going through cancer, or I was just, you know, experiencing something really lousy in my life, and your book let me get away from it all for a few hours and laugh, and that's like the best praise I could possibly get. I love that.
Absolutely. Better than yoga. That's awesome.
That's right. And you don't get all sweaty. Well, you might get all sweaty depending on which book you're reading and which theme. But...
right. I was laughing so hard today at your Facebook posts. Sometimes I just... You and there's a couple of other authors who just, you know, you say it like it is, but you say it with such flair. But I just love it.
You know, I think some people think, especially when I'm like posting random shit that I say to, you know, gas station attendants or spilling food on my boobs or whatever it is that I'm posting about doing. Like, my husband has said to me before, you know, people probably think you're just making this up for the laugh, and they don't know you like I know you, and know that, like, you're probably toning it down a little bit.
Just a little.
People, I get asked all the time, like, why? So why do you write romantic comedy? It's like, you know what? Because I'm pretty much a magnet for absurd things. Like, I once waxed off my own eyebrows and then accidentally redrew them in with green eyeliner and didn't know I'd done that until I got to work. Like, that kind of thing happens to me all the time.
Well, so you're your own romantic comedy that you've got going on. Well, you know, I mean, if you can't get material from your own life, then hey.
Exactly. I take people after, you know, are you worried you're going to run out of material? I'm like, no. I pretty much attract that kind of silliness and just random stupid shit that happens to me. So.
Right. Oh, that's nice to know that other people have random stupid crap happening constantly in their life. I felt like I was just some, like, plagued and, you know, some kind of curse over me. Felt like Eeyore with
a
black cloud.
I'm pretty lazy as an author, so, like, just being able to draw from my own life experiences is kind of handy. I don't have to think about it all that much.
The bonus to that is it's very authentic when it comes from, you know. Like, go ahead, I didn't interrupt you.
Oh, no, I was going to say, the one that just came out a couple weeks ago, The Hang Up, is the second book in a series called First Impressions, although I write them so they can be just completely standalone books. But that's, like, kind of the epitome of me as a lazy author. The whole series is set around this PR and branding agency, and my day job for 15 years has been in PR and marketing. So, like, oh, okay, well, I don't have to think too much about how to do this. Not a lot of research involved in this one.
Well, and that kind of goes along with the whole, you know, I mean, a lot of advice that authors get is write what you know. So, I mean, you know, you can't go wrong. You're getting authentic material from your own life, and there you go. But what are some other sources of material that you get? Are you a people watcher person, or do you draw from, you know, the media?
I'm super nosy. I, like, stalk people on Facebook and eavesdrop on conversations, and then, yeah. It's interesting. I was just working with a web designer today, doing some bookmarks for that I'm going to be handing out for a promotion that's happening next week, and I was like, okay, I kind of need to capture the two sides to my romantic comedy career. You've got, like, the books that I write for Entangled, which are you know, they're romantic comedy, and the ones I write for romantic comedy for Motlake are also romantic comedy. But the Motlake ones, you know, there's a good chance you might cry a little bit here and there. And the Entangled ones, you know, you're gonna, like, stick your hand in your pants and diddle yourself. Like, that's there's, like, the risque side and the slightly less risque side. But they're both equal. I mean, my agents asked me before, like, if you had to choose between the two, and I really couldn't pick. I love both. I love both aspects of, you know, the kind of heartwarming romantic comedy and the really risque romantic comedy.
Right. I mean, that's just your personality. You're probably very well-rounded on, you know, both ends. And and you've got to write the romantic comedy. Just, it's probably an escape for you to write it, you know? I mean, just to step out there and make them cut up with each other and say terrible things to each other that are hilarious. And
yeah.
Put your heroine through horrible things.
It is definitely true that I draw from a lot of real life stuff. You know, if the ones that I've written for Motlake, I've kind of joked with people that about that fling ended up being my sort of divorce therapy. A lot of aspects of my own divorce experience that went into that book. And ironically, because I was on such a tight deadline with that, I was writing that one a good chunk, about the first third of it, I was writing on a balcony while on my honeymoon 2 years ago. So,
oh, wow. Kind of a what a great honeymoon. No.
Worked out all right. So, yeah, I got to have the happy ending and also write it. So, I enjoyed
that.
Well,
that's awesome. That's awesome. So I have to go back to your bio and ask you about the banana and toe thing. How the hell did you figure that out? I mean, that you could even do that.
I've always had really a friend called a monkey toad once, and I
yeah,
you know,
we have
like, if I drop my razor in the shower, I can pick it up with my toes without thinking. And I remember as a kid even noticing this, and I once decided I was going to try to make my bed with my toes, which I did, you know, just in case I ever lost my arms, I would have that covered. So somebody once dared me, like, what are some of the things that you can do with your toes? And I decided I would actually try to type, which did not go so well. But the peeling the banana I managed to do, and even actually, like, was able to hold it up to my face until the banana broke and then just smacked me in the face, and that stopped being fun, but... But I did.
Okay, were you sober at
that.
This time? Was this a sober thing, or was this just a...
I was totally sober, yes.
Oh,
fact,
wow.
I think it was
that's
even, like,
crazy.
Breakfast time.
Yeah, okay. Well, there you go. Truth or dare, you're definitely taking the dare, I guess.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't take a whole lot to coax me into doing something absurd.
So let's go back to the beginning of your journey. Before you started writing, were you always a big reader, or was this something that you developed later?
Yeah, I've been reading, I mean, my whole life. I'm kind of an obsessive reader, and I've usually got 3 or 4 different books going at the same time. In fact, right this very second, I'm sitting in my car waiting for my book club to start. I've been a part of a reading group book club for 15 years, and so I'm
wow.
just like hanging out while all the ladies are starting to gather. So yeah.
Yeah, that's like family.
Reading's been a huge part of my life always. So yeah.
And then at what point did you decide, oh, you say you do PR and marketing as your day job.
Yeah,
I started
out as a journalist, actually, and that was, so, okay. you know, writing, but, yeah, and I was a lit major in college.
Okay,
until,
yeah.
Gosh, like my late 20s. Actually, in college, I took a fiction writing class just for fun, and I remember just being so mind-whacked that, like, wait, so I just get to make stuff up? That seemed, after, you know, years of doing the journalist thing, that seemed
right.
wrong. And, yeah, it took me a while to kind of get the, and I think, too, when I started out as an author, I was just so accustomed to having to research the heck out of everything that I probably went too heavy on the research for a lot of the initial books that I wrote. So getting into the groove of just making shit up was something new to me.
Well, yeah, because journalism's so fact-based, you know, it's very... more linear. You're following
uh-huh.
a path. Yeah. Yeah. So you had to create your own path. That's a little different.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So you found out you were basically, you could be full of shit and that you could make it up. And what made you just say, okay, I'm going to try this whole book thing? Or
It actually, speaking of my book club, that was sort of where it originated, and that they like to joke and take credit for it. But it was probably, gosh, we've been together 15 years, so we've probably only been a book club for maybe 2 years when we read a very well-known romance author's novel as we just decided to do a, you know, fluffy summer read. And it was awful. And I was a big romance reader at the time, but this is my first time reading this particular author, who I will not name, but we just were all horrified, and we're like, I remember like actually slamming the book down on the table and going, God damn it, if this shit can get published, so can I. And so that was my first foray into thinking, oh, this looks super easy, I can totally do this, and learned pretty quickly that it's not quite as easy as it looks.
Yeah, no, it's a bit more of a struggle, but yeah, you're right, though. I mean, there's some stuff out that does get published that, yeah, I've certainly read better indies, you know, that self-published. So, yeah, it's,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty amazing. were you already involved in marketing and all that when you decided to write?
Yeah, I think, where was I working then? Yeah, so I would have been the communications manager for a medical center at that point, which is
okay.
Actually kind of ends up being a lot of good fodder for books there. But just kind of on the side. In fact, I initially started out trying to write for a line that Harlequin had just launched called Bombshell, which was like a women's action adventure kind of line.
Uh-huh.
And the reason, and you're going, I've never heard of it. And there's a reason you've never heard of it, which is that the line folded after less than a year And they had actually acquired my what was supposed to be my debut novel. And it was supposed to be coming out, I don't remember what year that was, February, but they canceled the line in January. So I found myself out on my butt with my novel that was supposed to be published did not actually happen. And that was same day that I was told by my employer that I was going to be fired for my refusal to adhere to the company's hosiery policy.
Are you kidding me?
And then
I
came home that same day and my cat died. And I remember sitting on my back porch and just being like, this kind of sucks. But I mean, if you think about it, it's kind of funny to have all these things happening at one time. And I think that was actually sort of a turning point for me where I was like, all right, if I can find some humor in what is arguably one of the worst days of my life, maybe that's the direction I should be heading with my career.
Yeah, tell me about it. That's terrible. That would have to be one of the best, worst days ever. It sounds like a country song.
Yep.
So you got you're sitting here on virtually unemployed, dead cat, and manuscript in hand. Did you go back to the table and write more, or did you take that manuscript and go somewhere else with it?
I scrapped that manuscript, which I'm glad about because, you know, in hindsight, that wasn't my best possible form of writing. And that's when I decided, you know, okay, I'm going to take my shot at writing humor.
Oh,
and
okay.
I went out and wrote kind of a cozy, mystery, quirky comedy thing and started querying agents and ended up, it's actually kind of a long story where I chose an agent who ended up just not being the right fit, and the agent what I had like the best sense about in the first place, I didn't initially choose her, and a year later I went back with my tail between my legs and I'm like, you know, you really were the better fit, and I wish I'd gone with you, and let's start this thing over. So I've been with her now for 8 or 9 years, I'm not sure, but absolutely love her. Would not be anywhere with my career without her. So, but we had a kind of a long haul there, even after that, of just shopping book after book and being told, well, it's not quite romance and it's not quite comedy and we don't quite know what it is.
You
know, I think that was before romantic comedy had really taken off. I mean, we got nothing but awesome praise for the kind of book that I was writing, but everyone was just like, well, we don't know what to do with it.
It wasn't really around. So that's, you were like before your time. So that's okay. they found a place for you in the world. So that's good. So somebody finally gave it a try, apparently, or you wouldn't be out in the world talking to me and selling these great books. And you know, your reception from, like you said, from your readers is that, you know, that they often find it that they're having hard times in their lives, and these are books that kind of help you get through those hard places just to take your mind off it for a while and things like that. And that's just a really cool thing. And it's almost like magical that you have that kind of effect on people. So when you got your first, I want to call it fan mail or whatever it was, someone who told you that type of thing, was that when it was just like hit you that you were like, wow?
I don't know if it's still, you know, even after all this time sunk in, like I put these books out there and sometimes I forget there are actual people reading them and I get these emails and it's just like, is somebody playing a practical joke on me? I know that's kind of silly after I've been at it for this long, but I'm still sort of mystified by the whole idea that people are reading my books.
Yeah, because when you write it, you're writing it because you want to get this out, you know, out of you. Type of thing, kind of a clean out the attic type of thing when those characters are talking and need to come out.
A little bit. I mean, I definitely, you know, I as a comedy author, certainly I'm writing to make people laugh. I don't know. I'm still sometimes surprised when they actually do.
So do you laugh? I mean, are you writing and laughing your ass off while you're doing it? And you know, people think you're crazy.
and then sometimes the things that make me laugh are like, my editor will be like, no, that's not funny. Or my critique partner's like, I don't understand what you're doing here.
That's funny.
And then actually that's the part I always find the most entertaining. I'm just about tomorrow to send out a new book to all my critique partners and beta readers and agent. And the probably my favorite part of the whole process is when I get that feedback from everybody. Like, there will be a line that, I mean, every single person will identify a different thing that they will comment, you know, this made me laugh hysterically. And it's never the same thing. Like, but I love how different aspects of the book will touch different people or make them laugh or make them cry. Or so I enjoy that. And
well, you know, I say this every time, and I probably say it every single time I have a show. Everybody reads a different book because your background is different, mm-hmm. you know. So like you said, you know, you're used to the crazy stuff happening in your life and, you know, ridiculous things happening like the banana. And, you know, you have a romantic comedy type of life, and other people may not have that. So some things might not strike them as amusing, where they might be really clumsy. So the clumsy things happen to them, and then they're like, oh yeah, that's me, you know. So mm-hmm. little things, people identify with different parts of the story differently because of their background, their backstory. They have their own backstory, mm-hmm. like a book would have. So yeah, everybody gets a little bit something different. I mean, I read a completely different book than the next person, even though it's the same words. So yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty neat though. I still think that writing is magic because of that right there. It's because you can put, 285 pages worth of words down or 300 pages worth of words down. And to each individual person, they're reading a separate book. They might get same things out of some parts, but generally mm-hmm. speaking, they're getting different things because of their own knowledge. So yeah, it's pretty uh-huh. cool. It's magical. So, yeah. Whatever. I said it. It's out there.
Magical smut.
Magical. Yeah. And then Half Naked Men makes it even better. So,
magical, funny smut with Half Naked Men.
There you go. So let's talk about your heroes. What are your heroes? Of course, you have the different types of heroes for your Montlakes and your risque romances and your lovey romances. But your heroes, tell me a little bit about where you get kind of their vibes from.
This is where I'm supposed to say they're all inspired by my husband.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Make sure you say that and then go ahead and tell us the real story.
I'm here to probably sure that little pieces of him inspire little pieces of the heroes.
But, oh, sure.
I've never been an author who can write or would want to write, you know, the knuckle-dragging alpha hero. That's kind of not I mean, I know that sells, and I know some people dig that. It's just not my thing. I definitely tend to write more of the beta hero. And mm-hmm. I write, obviously, all my heroes have a really good sense of humor, usually a little bit on the dry side of things. I didn't actually know that I did this until I'd had several books published and somebody pointed it out to me, but every single hero I have ever written has really big hands, and it's clearly a fetish of mine. So now that it's been pointed out to me.
I wonder why.
My husband has massive hands, so I always tell him, it's you, honey, but I suppose that particular turn-on was a thing probably long ago.
It's weird that somebody, like, actually read them all and then pointed that out, because they must have their own fetishes. So, but anyway, go ahead.
And another thing that somebody else pointed out to me, and I didn't catch this until many books in as well, is I seem to write a lot of shower sex scenes, and I've tried to get myself away from that in the last few books. But if you go back through most of my early books, you'll find a shower sex scene in about probably 80% of them.
Man with big hands in the shower.
It's for soap, people.
There you go.
last year, we added this two-headed tile shower to our house, and I asked the accountant if I could write it off as a research expense on our taxes.
See,
he said no.
Shower seats. God, that's hilarious.
Actually, he did say I would if I were to try to do that, I would have to provide documentation of the frequency with which it was used for research purposes. So
every night. What? No. That's so funny. God.
I would love to see the look on the IRS person's face.
No kidding. But, you know, they're also exciting anyway. But yeah. Oh, wow. That's funny as hell. Sorry. And so she switches to, if you get that, and then you switch to hot tub scene, so you can get a hot tub, and then.
Nice. Maybe I'll just start. Yeah, like I'm going to set a book in the Bahamas.
There you go. Exactly. I need to research. Hey, there you go. Now, all you up and coming authors, you know how it works now. we're almost halfway through the show. I'm going to go ahead and put the phone number out if anybody wants to call in and talk to Fauna. Fauna. Why did I say Fauna?
You know what? I get Tanya, I get Tana, I get, my boss actually calls me Tamra because somebody mistakenly called me that once. Great. And he thought it was so funny.
Fauna.
So, yeah.
Well, I was just, it may be because I was just watching Once Upon a Time before I came in here, and I was thinking it was one of the fairies. Anyway, okay, Tana, I got it right now. The phone number is 347-633-9609 if anybody wants to call in. Sorry about that. I told you, you heard me at the beginning, tripping over my mouth. Wow. Okay, so your heroes have big hands and you like shower scenes.
Just to recap.
Just recapping the first
That's
half of the show. When you sit down to write, okay, you obviously, I mean, there's two different moods here. I mean, you're very lighthearted with your comedies, your rom-coms, and then, you know, you've got your regular romance, that'll make you cry type of romance. So do you have a process? I mean, I know you're probably on deadlines and that's how you have to, you know, lay out your books. But when you switch from, let's say you just finished writing one of your romantic comedies in the series and you switch over and you started to write one of your other regular romances, do you have, I mean, it's a different frame of mind. You know, romance is romance, but, you know, to tone it down, to get more serious, do you have different writing rituals for those or music or anything?
For sure, yeah. One thing I love about my agent is really smart about, like, staggering those books so that I'm always writing every other one being the, you know, like the more serious and then the fluffy fun. So, like, the one I'm finishing right now is a pretty intense one that – that involves, actually I don't want to give anything too bad away, but yeah, there's a death in there, and there's some, you know, that some things you would not think of being necessarily in romantic comedy. And it's clearly still comedy, but it's definitely been a heavier book, and it's, you know, it's a tougher kind of book to write. And so right now I'm super excited about getting to dive in next to the third book in the First Impression series, which is called The Hookup. And that one I'm very excited. It seems like as series go on, I get more and more excited about each next book. So I think I'm probably, I'm probably not supposed to say this, but I loved The Hang Up more than I loved The Fix Up. And I haven't even written a single word of The Hook Up yet. And I already love it more. So.
Oh yeah. So you've already know where you're going with it. So.
But yeah, I think you mentioned music, and that's a huge, huge, huge part of the, like, I couldn't possibly juggle this many books if I didn't have musical playlists for every single book. And I'm just on my way over here in the car, I was toggling through playlists that I'm starting to put together for the next three books that I'm going to write. And that's such a key part of it for me, is like just kind of establishing the mood of that book and then adding to the playlist. And so, like, when I get to a stage like I'm at right now with the one I'm about to turn in, like, I'm listening to that playlist as I edit just nonstop to make sure I'm still in that zone. And then when I'll have to jump into the next book, and then when I have to jump back, then I get to use that musical playlist as my kind of audible cue for what I'm supposed to be doing. And then I also have, every book I write has its own scented candle, and that's kind of my trigger. So, like, if I'm bouncing back and forth between edits on one and then I have to revisit a book I haven't visited for a while, then that's another thing that I'll use to kind of cue myself to get back into the zone for that book.
Well, that's pretty cool, because, you know, your olfactory and memory work together so tightly. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Do you share that, like, at the end of your book? Do you say, this is my playlist, and I had vanilla bean candles burning for this book?
I never have. I probably should, huh?
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
I think I post stuff every now and then on Facebook. I don't think I've really gone into it with the candles, but definitely I share the playlists every now and then on Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's nice to, you know, kind of know what's happening in somebody's head a little bit more. You know, it's kind of like getting to know you talking to your hearer. It's the same type of thing. Just getting a little bit more of, I don't know, makes the story. It's like it provides more back support of the story. I don't know why. It just so anyway. so that's pretty cool.
I once
cool,
tested
though.
My husband. I put on the playlist for when we were on a long road trip. I was like, and he, keep in mind, this guy has only read, he hasn't read all my books. He's read a few of them, but like I play him the playlist and go, okay, which book do you think it was? And he knew every single one he got right. So
that's awesome.
I found that
what
kind of interesting.
Good husband.
But just, kudos, you know, I sometimes think it's all in my head and like, what's the vibe of this book or that book? But there's definitely something to that.
So it does come across, apparently, because if he was able to read it that way, that's awesome. Do you sit down and write linear, or are you a piecemeal, like skip around?
I'm pretty linear. Although I do like, I'll be trucking along and I'll get to kind of a climactic moment and go, oh, I didn't know that was the bad guy. Or I've gotten better as I've been at this a while at, plotting things out ahead of time, but I'm still very much a pantser when it comes to writing. I kind of do things by the seat of my pants, and even when I map out a whole synopsis, which I, for my Entangled books, I always have to give a pretty clear synopsis ahead of time for what I'm going to be writing. But even then, I find myself deviating from that a little bit and surprising myself with little twists and turns and things. So,
right. Well, yeah, because creativity unfolds as it unfolds. Even for a plotter, I think that, you know, there's going to be some deviation from that. When you start, like you said, you were getting ready to start with your third book in that series. You just got an idea and kind of where you want to go with it, and who your main characters are, and then you sit down and go.
Yeah, I've had to, because Entangled requires the synopsis just when they buy a multi-book deal from me like that. They want to see that, and it's also just important to make sure I'm not going to go off on some random ass tangent, which I have been known to do. So I do know the basic gist of this one, what's going to happen, and then the characters actually, or at least the heroine in this one, people who read The Hang Up already met Ellie. She is the sister of the hero from The Hang Up. That was one thing that really surprised me. The Hang Up has it's a hero who has kind of a complex, a hang up with needing to take care of his sister and her 5-year-old son, who is in remission from recovering from cancer. And so that 5-year-old has a lot of cute little lines and things. Just to back up a bit, like if you'd asked me 7 years ago if I would ever write a book with kids in it, I would have laughed in your face. Like I was so, I hate kids. Kids suck. And then I ended up, dating my husband, actually before he and I even got together, people would be like, oh, you don't hate kids. You should meet Craig Zagurski's kids. And then I ended up not just meeting the kids, but falling in love with the dad and thinking, oh, these kids actually are pretty awesome. So that's part of how Henry, the 5-year-old in that book, is, I mean, a lot of the silly one-liners out of his mouth are things that my stepdaughter, who was 5 at the time I first met her, is now 9, or 10, I'm sorry. that a lot of the cute little one-liners are straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
Awesome. Well, that's funny, and you're right, because some funny, funny stuff comes out of the mouth of kids that, you know, you're just like, wow.
Well, yeah, so sorry, where I was going with that is I was just surprised. Like, every single review on Amazon talks about how cute they found Henry.
Aww.
And his interactions with the uncle and that kind of, and a lot of the reviews too, saying, I hope Henry's mom gets her own happily ever after, which I had already planned, but I hadn't expected the kid, Henry, to be resonating with readers in quite that way. So that is good feedback for me, because, you know, I might've been inclined to just kind of tone down the parenthood thing. And now that I know it's resonating so much with readers, I'm like, great. I can throw in all kinds of cute little Henry scenes.
There you go. Well, and you, yeah, you stepping into a relationship where you, I mean, I am too, I have kids of my own, and now I have four stepchildren, but they don't live with us. But yeah, it made for a whole new, like, wow, this is totally uh-huh. different. And, you know, I was used to having my two kids and then here in my little world, and then, wow, it's like we're the Brady Bunch all of a sudden. So yeah, that makes for some great situations, and especially
yeah.
trying to fit in a romance around that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely, one thing I don't think I could ever write romances with heroes and heroines in their like early 20s. And, you know, you're never going to catch me writing, be like, you know, virgin heroine.
New adult,
yeah. No, it's just not. I love stories where they're a little seasoned and maybe a little battered and have learned some hard life lessons and maybe even a little jaded. Those are my favorite kind of people to write.
So you, there's a big difference between the writing of the romantic comedies versus the regular romances. Do you find, it may be easier for you because it sounds like it is to write the romantic comedies. They're very heavily concentrated with dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
That's where all the witty, sarcastic, wisecrack, smart-ass attitudes come out in the dialogue. So
uh-huh.
Is it hard for you to kind of tone it down when you go back to the others?
No, you know, I mean, everything I write is romantic comedy, so even when I'm writing slightly darker, heavier stuff, they've got that witty banter. But yeah, I've definitely known, I mean, I see it in almost all the reviews of my books as a dialogue writer. It's the quick,
yeah.
witty banter is something that I'm kind of known for, and that's just super fun for me to write. So, yeah.
Well, and it comes naturally to you. So it's, I mean, it's part of your personality too. Now, the funny thing is, I mean, really, because if I met somebody who was, and I've met plenty of authors who are very quiet and introverted, and, you know, they're not like real outgoing people in the world and stuff. And I just, it would be really hard for me to read, to know them like that and read some, like a romantic comedy. I'm very heavily dependent on the dialogue because they're just not that type of person. But I think it, you know, it comes across because it is very, very authentic with you. And that's awesome because you write what you know. So
yeah,
that's
the point. I've sometimes thought, I mean, I definitely, it's almost like I'm cheating a little bit on the, like, a romantic comedy just lends itself well to social media, you know, the Facebook
yeah.
posts and the tweets and the blog posts and you know, quirky little
Absolutely.
Newsletter articles. It's just, it's my voice translates well to that. And so
yeah.
I sometimes feel bad for, like, one of my critique partners writes more serious kind of inspirational romances, and it just, her genre and her voice don't lend themselves as well to that kind of thing. I mean, her
yeah.
books are awesome, but it's just...
No, you definitely have to market it differently and promote it differently. because you're right. You could just take quotes out of your book and make nice little graphics. Boom, 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 there you go. So, yeah, no, that's funny. But if you see, it's the same thing, like you were talking about movies, romantic comedy movies. It's the same thing. You know, if you look at a preview for a romantic comedy movie, you know, you're going to see scenes with them saying smart ass things to each other or something, you know, like that, or something weird happening or something like that, versus some more serious movie is going to be all music and words going across the screen and all that. So, yes, it's
mm-hmm.
because it's so dependent on that connection between the characters and the dialogue, which
yeah.
is awesome, because if you can write it, then, you know, then people... If you can really write it to where people are hearing it and that whole banter, the whole conversation going on in their head, then you've done the magic. You've provided the magic. So,
yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
so,
you know, it wasn't until the Montlake books are the ones that started coming out first in audiobook, and that kind of blew my mind the first time I ever listened to one of my books
yeah.
in audiobook format. Like, whoa, that's what that dialogue sounds like, really.
Well, it's different because you're writing it, you're hearing it, but then when you hear somebody else, yeah, that would be really a trip. And so are all your books coming out on audio now? Did they do them all on Audible?
I I know that all the ones that I write for Motley, so Let It Breathe is on audiobook. Mm-hmm. Now That It's You, which comes out in September, is on audiobook. About That Fling is on audiobook. I know there's some talk about my Entangled ones, but I don't think there's anything in the works yet, although stay tuned. Subscribe to my newsletter, and I'll let you know as soon as I know.
All right. That's cool. Yeah, because that would be funny. It'd be like watching a movie, but you know, without the picture. So, that's really. You don't read out your script out loud, or your script? I said script. Read your writing out loud to yourself or anything like that.
Not on a regular basis. Every now and then, I might, if a piece of dialogue's not flowing quite right, I might try reading it out loud just to see if I can work it out. But as a habit, I don't do it a lot. Like, I know plenty of authors that read the whole book a lot of themselves, but. Right now I'm just on such a fast paced writing schedule that I don't have quite as much time to linger over things as sometimes I wish I did. But I think, what do we have? 4 books this year? I think we've been on about a 4 or 5 book a year kind of schedule. So that's that keeps me hopping. And I'd still hang on to my part-time day job and have to have, you know, family and personal life. So it's a little bit of a balancing act sometimes.
So you can turn out a book in 3 months or less?
Yeah, I usually average anywhere from 4,000 to 5,000 words per writing day. And Mondays and Fridays are my dedicated writing days. If I'm really cranking on a deadline, I usually will, you know, try to hammer out 1,000 words a few weeknights. So like we're actually taking a family vacation here at the end of July, and I was plotting out this book that I have to finish by mid-September. I'm like, okay, looks like I'll be writing 1,000 words per vacation day while I'm there, which is fine. There are worse places to be writing romantic comedy than poolside with a margarita in my hand.
True. I can't think of a better place. That'd be awesome. too bad you can't do that every day.
No kidding.
So let's talk about tell me just a little bit what the kind of overreaching arc for your let me get this right. The one that has the hang up and the fix up.
The first impression. So it's all based around a PR and branding agency by the name of First Impressions. So, like I said, that's my background. So, you know, that wasn't too much of a stretch for me. So the first book in the series was The Fix Up. And that was with Holly was the heroine. She's one of the co-owners of the First Impressions branding and PR firm. And she ends up with a socially awkward, sexy geek who has just taken the reins of his family's company as CEO, and he's super smart, but doesn't quite have the charisma or social skills to lead a company. So she agrees to basically rebrand him, and obviously hilarity and hijinks ensue, and sex on a boardroom table, and so on and so forth. But that one was super fun to write. The sexy geek thing is was such a kick. Like I had him, a lot of the things that he had in mind for seduction strategies were like a Star Wars movie marathon and a thumb wrestling challenge, and which actually worked surprisingly well. So.
Okay.
And then book number 2 is Holly's partner in the First Impressions branding and PR firm. And that's Miriam she's more the graphic design side of things. And she's the total city girl, indoorsy, you know, wears high heels pretty much for everything, and wants nothing at all to do with the great outdoors or outdoor adventures or anything like that. And she, you know, her father was actually killed in a mountain climbing accident. So there's a little bit of a heart tugging element to that one, but she ends up with a guy who has just taken the reins as the CEO of a company that's a little bit like REI. So, and he needs her help to kind of get the company turned around and rebranded and to polish his own CEO skills. And he, in turn, takes her on a lot of outdoor adventures and kind of reintroduces her to living a little. But that one was super fun. I myself am pretty outdoorsy. I love stand-up paddleboarding and caving and things like that. So it was kind of neat to get to write. Like, I have a a sexy scene that takes place in a cave that was way fun to both write and research. And what else? There's canoeing. There's all kinds of little things like that that were just nice little elements to add in there from my real life.
Uh-huh. And so then, where are you going with the third book?
So the third book is The Hookup. Yeah, that's so Jason's sister, Ellie, from the first book, the mother of Henry. She, as you learn in The Hang-Up, she is has started selling sex toys as a, you know, kind of an online sort of like a pure romance or a, you know, it's a made up company. But by the time book three rolls around, her career and her business will have really taken off. And so naturally she needs to hire the services of a PR and branding firm. So she goes to her brother's now wife and end up doing a series of videos. And so she will fall for the video producer, which, again, going back to the lazy writer thing, that's my husband is a video producer by profession. So that won't be much of a stretch to write either.
Well, that sounds fun. Okay. So when you're going to start writing that one, and that one is expected out fall, or are we talking about next year?
Let's see. That one is, so I start writing it as soon as I get through edits on this one. So I'll start writing probably mid-July. It's due mid-September, and it will come out, I think, in February. It's either end of January or beginning of February. So, the one that comes out before that is Now That It's You, and that's a Montlake book. So, like I said, they're pretty well staggered.
Yeah, that's good though. Like you said about, you know, you get a little more serious, a little less serious. Good staggering for your brain.
Yeah, yeah, that works out well for me.
What else do you have coming out this?
So the next one is Now That It's You. That comes out September 6th, I think, early September. And that's my third book with Montlake. So, you know, certainly one of the more serious ones. It's the heroine is a caterer and a chef who, she was in a 10-year long relationship with a guy. The relationship had its ups and downs, and they, split up 2 years ago when, at their wedding, she kind of pulled a runaway bride move. And hasn't seen the guy for 2 years. And so she, after 2 years, has decided she's going to make amends and kind of mend the fences and just, you know, become friends with him again. So she shows up to try to make right with him. And I won't give anything away, but just learns that that option is not going to be on the table. Over the course of the book, she ends up getting closer and closer to his brother, who was always a good friend, but, you know, kept his distance because, of course, this was his brother's fiance. There's just that awkwardness of, you know, the fiance, the you know, she was in a 10-year relationship with his brother, and how can you transition to being in a relationship with the younger brother? And, you know, he's got all kinds of hang-ups about that. And then, of course, in the middle of all this, she ends up embroiled in a legal battle with his family over the rights to an aphrodisiac cookbook that she wrote and her ex took the pictures for. He was a photographer. Morphed into just a big, ugly, big, ugly legal fight. And, you know, they all kind of get tangled up and caught in the middle of it. So,
that one sounds, and see, that's so different than the other, but sounds really good. So, yeah.
And so, it's about writing a book like that that's like got obviously some more serious edges to it.
Right.
How you still make it comedy is just throwing in these silly little scenes. Like there's a scene early in the book where they are sitting on a park bench, kind of reminiscing and thinking about the brother, and you know, having this serious conversation. And this group of LARPers shows up. Do you know what LARPers are?
Yes.
Live role action players. Role play. So like the people that dress up in weird medieval period costumes. Uh-huh. And so they show up and like think that these two are there for the game. And so they end up kind of thinking about it and like, well, what the hell? So they join in this live action role play game. And, you know, it's the kind of the most absurd thing to do the day after something that fairly tragic has just happened. But they jump to it. And, you know, there's this whole ridiculous scene that ensues. So Yeah, that right there is sort of how you write comedy over a, you know, a book that has some very serious undertones.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. kind of like watching House, you know, the subject matter is just really dark and serious, but you know, throw in the crap he does. Wow. So yeah. Anyway, so that one's coming out in September, and then do you have another one coming out later after that too?
Yeah. So let's see. So that comes out in September. The Hookup comes out in February. The one that I am just putting the finishing touches on and sending to Critique Partners tomorrow is called This Time Around. And that one comes out, I think, in April of 2017.
Okay.
Yeah, so that one is a lovers reunited thing. They were high school and college sweethearts who split up, and they cross paths again 16 years later and kind of discover life has not turned out quite like either of them expected. So.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Good. Awesome. So we're getting down to the wire, and I want to make sure that everybody can find you online. Your website is tanafinsky.com. Is that correct, Lucy?
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah, Tana is T-A-W-N-A, Tana Finsky, okay. F-E-N-S-K-E. So tanafinsky.com. It's nice to be able to just like keep my own name and not have a pen name, because there's not a lot of other Tanas out there, and certainly no other Tana Finskys. So.
Well, there you go.
Yep.
As long as you're unique, then it doesn't matter. And all your, they can get all your social media links on there as well.
Yeah. Yep. Everything's pretty easy to find too. Facebook, I think, is just my name, Tana Finsky, and Twitter is my handle, Tana Finsky. Yeah, I didn't deviate very far from that. So yeah, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter. I blog sometimes, but I'm probably most active on Facebook, so that's usually the best place to find me. And then, yeah, I do have an author newsletter that they can find links to on my website, and I send that something out maybe about once a month or so, and that's actually a really good place to get, like, I do a lot of giveaways there, and, you know, exclusive excerpts and things like that.
And updates about what you got coming up.
Yeah, yep, exactly.
Okay, good, okay. Well, excellent. Well, then if you want to learn more about her, just go to our website, because you can find everything there.
Yes, indeedy.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show tonight. And
thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
Hope you had a good time. And let's try to touch it. We'll touch base through Entangled again in the spring and see what's up and try to get you back on the show again. And
that sounds great. Yeah. I get my agent and I are just talking about since we'll be wrapping up that third book in the series, what comes next?
Yeah.
What do I want to write next? So
maybe
I'll know the answer to that by then.
That's right. We always want to get the good stuff early, find out early.
Uh-huh.
So So good luck on the next in the series and your fall releases. And I really, like I said, I really appreciate you coming on, spending an hour talking to me and letting me know a little bit about your world, your crazy world.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a kick. Yeah, usually, you know, we authors are so like stuck in our little introvert caves and we don't get out much to talk to humans. So that's it's
right.
Kind of a treat.
Well, I wouldn't call me human, but, you know, I'm here on the other end, so it's all good. Well, have a great time at Book Club, and tell everybody, you know, don't ever stop reading. 15 years is an amazing long time for a book club, and I'm so jealous. I wish I could buy one.
I will be sure to let them know that they have your respect and admiration.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As a former librarian, I am, keep on going. That's all great. Well, have a great evening, and I'll let you get on to book club and I'll wrap up the rest of the show. So,
Sounds good.
I said, thanks again.
Thank you. Have a great night.
All right. And you guys, thanks for listening in tonight. You can find me on Facebook as The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am on Twitter as HOT_librarian_ and Google+ as Tabitha Pope. This broadcast has been recorded and will be available as a podcast from the Authors on the Air website, SoundCloud, and iTunes. You can find Authors on the Air Global Radio Network just about anywhere in the social media universe out there, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest. We have several pages on and about 15 other shows, maybe 16 now, other shows on the network. It's www.authorsontheair.com. Thanks to Authors on the Air for letting me talk about romance and share the hottest authors in young adult, new adult, and adult romance and erotica with all of you. And thanks to my gorgeous husband in the other room watching my kiddo. And I will see you guys next Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern right here on The Librarian. And I wish you sweet dreams.